I am constantly seeing, especially in the Christiania chat, situations raised. I mean, this happens all the time where people that evangelize Christian identity are confronted with this question about Ruth. And I did a podcast on Ruth back in 2015. And it's a long podcast, and I understand it's often tedious to get people to listen to an entire hour and a half presentation on a subject that to them might seem really simple. Ruth was a Moabite, and that's it, and I don't want to hear anymore. They think they know it all, just like those people I spoke about at the beginning this evening. They think they know it all because they learned it in church or in school, and they don't want to hear anymore. Because you can't possibly tell them anything new or different. So, a few weeks ago, I wrote a post in response to seeing these queries all the time. I wrote a post which I titled "Ruth in a Nutshell" in the Christiania Forum. And I initially had this down to about 1,500 words, as the forum post is, and I'm going to leave it like that because I'm going to put this text on the main website with this podcast. But this morning, I added another 1,000 words, so it's not quite as short as I had hoped. In any case, it is more concise than my October 2015 presentation on the subject, while at the same time, it does offer some new perspectives. This contention that Ruth was a racial Moabite is refuted in many ways in Scripture, and here is a relatively quick list of points which demonstrate that she must have been an Israelite. The phrase "land of Moab" also referred to the portion of Moab taken by Israel. The children of Israel inhabited a large portion of the land of Moab for over 300 years by the time of Judges chapter 11, and that is explicitly stated in that chapter. That is found in the words of Jephthah, who defended Israel when the Moabites tried to take back the land, and he said in part, from verse 26, "While Israel dwelt in Heshbon and her towns, and in Aroer and her towns, and in all the cities that be along by the coast of Arnon, 300 years, why therefore did you not recover them within that time?" Now it's 300 years after the children of Israel had taken this portion of the land of Moab, but they didn't even take it from the Moabites, they had taken it from the Amorites, who had already taken it from the Moabites. So now the Moabites wanted it back, and it's far too late. Although it was still called the land of Moab at that time, the actual Moabites lived only in the portion of ancient Moab which was south of the river Arnon, as it is also attested in that same chapter, especially in verse 18. So the land of Moab, which was inhabited by Israel, was still referred to as the land of Moab at a time which could not have been more than a few decades before Naomi, the mother-in-law of Ruth, could have been born. Saul had reigned only 2 years in 1 Samuel chapter 13, and David was already a young man just a short time later, in 1 Samuel chapter 16. And if you read those four chapters, not much time transpired between them. So David was born perhaps as many as 20 years before Saul was king. The Judges period, according to Paul of Tarsus in Acts chapter 13, was 450 years. So David was born perhaps around 130 years after Jephthah had made that statement concerning Moab. Ruth was his great-grandmother, and Naomi was a generation older. So she was most likely born around 3 decades after Jephthah's time, where the land of Moab inhabited by the children of Israel was still called the land of Moab. Moving on to my next point. The Israelites had often used geographic labels to describe one another. According to the genealogy, Boaz and Ruth are David's great-grandparents. So Ruth would have lived in the later part of the Judges period, not much longer than 50 or 60 years after the time of Jephthah. Throughout the book of Judges, men were often identified by the name of the town, village, or region from which they came, rather than by an Israelite tribal identification. So David was never called David the Judahite, but he is referred to as an Ephrathite, as his father was also called in 1 Samuel chapter 17 in verse 12. The town of Ephrath was renamed Bethlehem, an account which is given in Genesis chapter 35 in verses 16 through 19. So about 100 years before the time of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, as David's father was called in 1 Samuel 17, chapter 17, verse 12, Jephthah was identified only as a Gileadite in Judges chapter 11. No mention was made of the tribe of Israel to which Jephthah had belonged, and Gilead was a land adjoining Moab on the east of the Jordan, in the so-called land of Moab that Israel had come to occupy. Point three. When Naomi's husband and sons had died, she sought to return to Judah, and she was followed by the wives of her sons. But she must have had some hardship, since she then sought to discourage them from accompanying her. As we read in the opening verses of the book of Ruth, there was a famine in Moab, and she thought it would be better to return to Judah. But facing hardship, she had then begged her sons' wives to return to their own families in Moab. She could not have been expected to support her sons' wives, as she herself had no husband, and both of her sons were also dead. So Naomi expressed to them her prayer that Yahweh would deal kindly with them, and they wept, but only one of them returned, and Ruth stayed. So by Naomi having begged Yahweh to care for them, we cannot assume that she was an impious or uncaring woman begging Yahweh for something which was contrary to the law. Throughout the book of Ruth, Naomi is represented as a pious and humble woman who followed Yahweh and his law. Point four. There is a law in Deuteronomy, chapter 23, which reads, "An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. Even to their 10th generation, they shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh forever." There were laws of kinsman redemption in Israel, whereby the closest next of kin is obliged to redeem his brother under various circumstances. This is evident in places such as Numbers chapter 5 concerning trespass and Numbers chapter 27 concerning inheritance. So in reference to kinsman redemption, there is another law in Deuteronomy chapter 25 which reads from verse 6, "And it shall be that the firstborn which he bears shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name not be put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders, and say, My husband's brother refuses to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stands to it and says, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, So shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that has his shoe loosed." In Ruth chapter 4, when Boaz was given the opportunity of redeeming Ruth for the sons of Naomi, as well as a parcel of land that had belonged to her husband. There was another kinsman who was even closer in familial relationship to Naomi than was Boaz. So he had to be given the opportunity first. The other kinsman agreed to redeem the land, but he had declined to redeem Ruth, having given excuses. Therefore, the obligation fell to Boaz, a pious man who is portrayed as having upheld the law to redeem Ruth, and he did. So the law, which is found in Deuteronomy chapter 25, was invoked in Ruth chapter 4 in verse 7, and the other kinsman had surrendered his shoe to Boaz before all the people, and it became a testimony. Doing this, he had to endure the reproach for which the law had called. All of the parties involved in the redemption of Ruth had observed the law, and they must have all known the law. They knew the law of Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 6 through 10, and therefore they must have also known the law of Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 3, which prohibited the admission of Moabites into the congregation. One law of God cannot compel a man to intentionally transgress another law of God. So if Ruth were a Moabite by race, her marriage to Naomi's son would not have been legitimate. And the kinsman who could not redeem her only needed to cite barring Moabites from the congregation so that he himself could have avoided disgrace. He could not have neglected the law to assist in its breaking, or he himself would have been just as guilty of the transgression. But instead, knowing the law, he submitted and suffered disgrace. And Boaz also, knowing the law, had willingly redeemed Ruth. We cannot imagine that these men who were abiding by the law would, at the same time, willfully transgress the law. My fifth point. Over 400 years after David, Ezra continued to uphold the law which requires the exclusion of the Moabites. This is found in Ezra chapter 9, where not only Moabites, but many others are also excluded. And the men whom Ezra had found intermarrying with them were compelled to put away the wives and the children of them, which they had married. The wives which they had married. And their children, is how I should have worded that. Ezra identified such marriages as a transgression of the law and grieved that such transgressions had been committed. We cannot justly imagine that Ruth was a racial Moabite, while Ezra was a pious man upholding the law and compelling his fellow Judahites to expel their own wives and children whom they sired of the Moabites. It is absolutely certain that Ezra also knew the law, and not one word of criticism for his actions is found in any passage of Scripture. Jesus never said that Ezra was a sinner and should not have done such a horrible thing because his own great-grandmother was a Moabite. If that was true, and Ezra was alive in the time of Christ, he would have been opposed to God himself, or it must be understood that Ruth was truly an Israelite. There is a challenge raised in Ruth chapter 1 in verses 15 and 16. For which we shall cite Young's literal translation of the Bible. And she saith, this is Naomi speaking to Ruth, lo, thy sister-in-law has turned back unto her people and unto her God. Turn thou back after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, urge me not to leave thee, to turn back from thee, from after thee. For whither thou goest, I go, and where thou lodgest, I lodge. Thy people is my people, and my God, my God. That's Young's literal translation of that passage, and that's the correct translation. Because they were the same people and God. Naomi was able to bring Ruth to Judah in the first place. The Wycliffe Bible, with its odd medieval spellings and grammar, is in agreement at Ruth 1:16. And she answered, be thou not adversary to me, that I forsake thee, and go away. Whither ever, wherever thou shalt go, I shall go. And where thou shalt dwell, and I shall dwell together. Thy people is my people, and thy God is my God. Wycliffe's translation is very literal, and it is a good representation of the corresponding text of the Latin Vulgate, which he had used as his source. While Young also translated verse 1:16 perfectly, he erred, where in both the Masoretic text and the Septuagint, the word which he rendered as God in 1:15, chapter 1, verse 15, is actually plural, gods. Both Young and Wycliffe correctly translated verse 16 as statements in fact, as having expressed statements in fact, that the people of Naomi were indeed the people of Ruth, and that the God of Naomi was also the God of Ruth. But the word for God, or God, in those verses may also mean judge, and it is often translated as judge in Scripture. In the opening verse of the book of Ruth, we read, and it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Although the word for judges is different in verse 1, forms of the words El or Elohim are often judge or judges throughout the Old Testament. And that is the word in verse 15 here, where a slightly different form is used in verse 16, and we will discuss that. The ancient children of Israel in the Judges period had local judges ruling over them, as well as the judges who ruled over all Israel. And that is evident in Numbers chapter 31, in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 15 and 16, and elsewhere. From Deuteronomy chapter 1, and I spoke unto you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone. Yahweh your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude. Yahweh, God of your fathers, make you 1,000 times so many more as you are, and bless you as he has promised you. How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance and your burden and your strife? This is Moses speaking, of course. Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I will make them rulers over you. And you answered me and said, the thing which thou hast spoken is good for us to do. So I took the chief of your tribes, wise men and known, and made them heads over you, captains over thousands, and captains over hundreds, and captains over fifties, and captains over tens, and officers among your tribes. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother and the stranger that is with him. And observe what's going on there. The captains over thousands, and the captains over hundreds, and the captains over fifties, and the captains over tens, and the officers among your tribes are the judges. The captains in verse 15 are the judges of verse 16. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, he took those captains, made them judges, and told them how to operate that office, how to perform in that responsibility. You shall not respect persons in judgment, like if they have a degree or if they've been around for 30 years. But you shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid of the face of man, like if they have a degree or they've been around 30 years. For the judgment is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. And I commanded you at that time all the things which you should do. So the captains appointed over the people were also their judges, and the judges were important to the people, governing their daily lives and protecting them from oppressors. For a widowed woman without a family, the judge would be very much more important than to a self-sufficient and able man. So to these women and to Naomi and her two daughters-in-laws, what judges they would have had was important to them. It was important for them to be sheltered by a judge. And they would be more comfortable with the judges with whom they were familiar all their lives. An alternative possibility in relation to Ruth 1:15 only is the fact that the Israelites of Moab had been committing idolatry. It is certainly evident elsewhere in Scripture, and therefore that is also a possibility there. But we lean toward the reference in verse 15 as being to judges. An indication of this distinction between God in verse 16 and judges in verse 15 is this. In verse 15, the word Elohim is found in the text, which could refer to Yahweh as a plural of majesty, or to other gods or judges as a common plural noun. But in verse 16, on both occasions where the word God appears in the statement of Ruth, the form of the word is the singular form Eloha, E-L-O-A-H, it's spelled in English, Eloha, which is used quite often of Yahweh throughout Scripture, but not as often as the plural of majesty, Elohim. Eloah refers to Yahweh about 500 times in Scripture, almost. It's 480-something, I think. So in these two verses, there is a purposeful distinction in the two forms of the word. So for that, I believe that Elohim in verse 15 refers to the judges, and Eloah in verse 16 refers to Yahweh himself. In conclusion, here we have two choices. We must imagine that Naomi, Boaz, the unnamed kinsman, all the people of Bethlehem who witnessed the redemption of both the plot of land and of Ruth, and even Ezra the prophet, were all hypocrites who despised the law while they acted to uphold the law. Or we must imagine that Ruth was only a Moabite by geography, and she must have been an Israelite by race. The truth is that Naomi was a pious woman, and Boaz was a righteous man who lived according to the law, and therefore we should expect them to have made just decisions. Ezra was a pious priest who also sought to uphold the law. The people who interpret these things to have been in violation of the law are only looking to justify sin. Further proof is in the life of David. An explicit type for Christ himself and a man after God's own heart. It would be a terrible thing to have to look in the face of your Creator and insist to him that he would choose a bastard to be a man after his own heart. That's just crazy. So to think that Ruth was a racial Moabite is also an accusation that Yahweh God himself is a hypocrite. Since we read in Deuteronomy chapter 23 in verse 2 that a bastard shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh, even to his 10th generation, he shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. For my part, I would not want to be found accusing Yahweh of hypocrisy. Ruth was an Israelite, so get over it.